Hey everyone, I am here with Brother Greg Massey. He is our interim, I gotta look it up because I had to write it down, our interim associational mission strategist here for the Lauderdale Baptist Association here in Mississippi. And how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, thank you.
Yeah, well, this was completely random. He sat down to shoot a video and I just was very intrigued by your stories of past mission trips. And I just wanted to just soak up all the knowledge you have about missions itself. Yeah. And so, I just want to ask you, like, what is the importance of missions?
Well, it's, I mean, one, it's biblical. I mean, if God commanded us to go to our Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth, he doesn't give us any out on that. He means every church and every person in every church that's our responsibility. So that's missions. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more than just evangelization of people, though. And I think sometimes as churches, we feel like, we go and we share Jesus and now we're done. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the first step. Mm-hmm. So, actually, the first step is you pray before you get there.
Right.
But, you know, there are people who respond to the gospel. Well, now what do you do with them? Because mm-hmm. he tells us not just to go, but we're to make disciples mm-hmm. of those people. And so if you look back at what Paul would do, Paul went in prayerfully and with the support of churches, and Paul would go in and he would gather together those that could be won to the Lord, and then he would make disciples of those people. God would call out leaders, and he trained leaders. They formed church, and then from that church often would plant another church. Mm-hmm. And so that's the purest example of mm-hmm. missions that I can think of.
Yeah.
And a lot of IRMB missionaries are not involved just in evangelism. I mean, we have missionaries that are medical missionaries, and we have missionaries that are music missionaries. Mm-hmm. We have those involved with agriculture. Mm-hmm. Just about everything that you can think of that we do, you have missionaries that are using their talents and abilities mm-hmm. to help people and reach people and be able to share Christ with people.
How would you describe the word missionary? Because I remember one time we had a conversation about missionaries here in the States, and it seemed like you had like a, I don't know if I would call it that or not.
Yeah.
How would you describe missionary?
Well, we live in a time when churches are calling everything missions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that we should do that because I think it detracts from missions being for the lost.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not really careful, we call ourselves doing missions and use that for an excuse
mm-hmm.
Without really telling people about Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So we would do a ministry, what I would call a ministry, and there's nothing wrong with ministry. I mean, we all should be ministers wherever we are. I mean, we should feed the poor. We should. We should help clothe them. We should help shelter them. We should do all those things, even help train them so they can get jobs. We should do all of those things. But if we do all of those things and they never hear about Jesus, never accept Jesus, we've done no good at all because they'll still die and go straight to the depths of hell.
Right.
So with missions, a missionary is one who will go to people who otherwise are not going to hear the gospel anywhere. And there are some, it's over a billion, I think it's a little over 2 billion people that have no access to the gospel. Mm. You know, countries like we have gone in as a church. We've gone into India. Matter of fact, I have a missionary coming from India.
Wow.
Tomorrow. I'm going to pick him up at the airport tomorrow. So he'll be here for the evangelism conference. And he works in an area as large as the state of Texas. There are over 50 million people in that area, less than 1% Christian.
Mm.
And he is he works with 350 house churches, training the leadership, and he has it all marked. I mean, he can tell you where every one of those house churches is
mm-hmm.
and every church that house church has planted and who their leaders are and whether they've been baptized and whether they've gone through
mm-hmm.
basic discipleship and mm-hmm. or leadership training. He can tell you every one of those things. He's got it graphed out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a missionary.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a guy that, you know, God has called out and he's doing a great job.
Wow.
So missionaries go into people groups and we have people groups even in Meridian that really basically have no gospel presentation. We have Hindus and other religions, Muslims and others that are here. So I'm not saying you have to go overseas to be a missionary. But what I'm saying is that it needs to be all about sharing Jesus
with the lost.
And not just to the lost and not about the good things that, you
the
know,
actions,
the
yeah.
actions that we would do, which is ministry, and it's good. It's two-pronged. You need ministry, you need mission.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's so good. And so you have you been to India with this missionary? What other countries have you been to? And
About 40. Kathmandu and Nepal, where you can't witness openly. And really, it was hard to do that in India, in this particular province of India. It's called the Killer of Missionaries because they're very violent Hindus there.
Did you go by yourself?
And, no, I went with two other ministers and just a very small team. You have to take very, very small teams there.
How did you share the gospel in that scenario?
Well, in that scenario, we were not sharing the gospel with lost. We were training. We were doing storying training with the leaders.
Right.
But one place we went to, they were tribal, way back in the mountains, and we had over 600 people to show up. I'm still amazed at that many, and with all the rings in their noses, the women, you know, and everyone dressed away with the beautiful robes and outfits that they dressed there. We had over 600 trying to. Here, you know, but these were all people who were Christians. They just wanted to learn how to share the gospel a little more efficiently.
Right.
And so India is, it has my heart because of the 1.4 billion people that are there.
So,
but I've been in Moscow, Russia. I was in Argentina for 15 years. I've worked in Chile, in Peru, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, all over El Salvador, Belize. I mean, it's just like, but there, I counted one time, it was about 40 different countries that I've been in.
Wow. What? Okay, I want to ask another question, so I'm trying to remember this, but what makes India so hostile towards the gospel?
Well, they have hundreds of gods. And so, if you're preaching true gospel, there's only one God, and he's a jealous God. There's no room for any other gods. And so it's much like Paul when he went into a place with in the Greeks and the Greek pantheon, and he was trying to explain, you know, about the one true living God. And he said, you know, you see all these statues. I notice one has no name. Let me tell you about the one that has no name. He is the creator God. He is the God of gods. And so what he was trying to do is within that culture, not offend their culture, not say, hey, I don't, you know, you've got your gods and I've got mine, but mine is God. That he was trying to move in that direction. And that's kind of what you need to do, because Hindus will accept Jesus as a great teacher. They may even accept him as a God, but they have many, many other gods, and we know Scripture teaches us that you're not getting to heaven by believing that there's other ways to get there other than through Jesus and the blood of Christ. So they become violent because it's a danger to the status quo, just like Jesus was it was a danger for Jesus, for the scribes and the Pharisees. Because he taught differently than they taught. He made Scripture make sense, you know. And he could apply it to people, but it kind of showed that they were not who they said that they were. Well, the same thing happens, I think, there in India with the Hindus. As they're afraid because God's Spirit moves and people get converted, and they're afraid of that. They're afraid of that change. So they become very violent because of that.
Yeah, their freedom is the freedom to believe those thoughts is in jeopardy, and
I tell you, Tyler, they're at the point now. Still, I was told we were in a meeting. There were about 100 in another location, about 100 pastors there. And we were teaching, and they said, you know, we have to be very, very careful, or the Hindus will have us thrown out. I was in a, we drove all night one night to a different location, and we were supposed to be sleeping, but I couldn't sleep in that car, you know, driving. And when we got there, we went to a motel, and when they found out we were Christians, they wouldn't let us in the hotel. We couldn't sleep in the hotel.
Yeah.
Because they said there would be people who would resist that and could become violent by us being in a, just in a hotel, you know, in that place. So you will be persecuted. As a Christian in that country, you will be persecuted. So when people do make the change and become Christian there, you know they're sincere.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Wow. Yeah, it just, it makes, this sounds so cliche when talking about missions, but it just makes me so appreciative of here, and it makes me wonder why so many people abuse that.
Yeah.
That freedom to.
It's so easy here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So easy.
Yeah. It's amazing to hear these stories. I always forget my questions. I can't storm correctly. I had another one that I was going to ask about earlier, but you know, all these countries that you visited, there's so many, I bet there's so many stories where you've seen the Lord work, but could you tell me one that could maybe edify someone who's listening to to missions?
Matter of fact, I'll tell you one about the DR. I can tell you two or three about the DR. But when we got to the DR, and we've been praying for weeks before we got there as a vision team, first team, it came to the next to last day that we were going to be there, and we've been praying for a man of peace. If you read in the book of Luke, you'll find man of peace there. And we needed a man of peace. That's the first thing you do as a missionary is you pray over areas, and then you look for a man of peace. Well, we would get to a neighborhood, and we would walk that neighborhood, and we would just pray and introduce ourselves to people and give a witness where we could. And we find them. We got to this place next to last day, and I said, let's go down this road. I just feel like this is a road we ought to go down. And somebody said, well, it's a dead end. I said, well, it's a dead end, but who knows who's at the end of the road. And we got, as we started down that way, there was a man that was working on his flower garden outside. And I said, let's go talk to him. If there's a fence there, we weren't going to be looked at as hostile because there would be a fence between us. So I walked over and began to talk to him in Spanish. And first thing you know, I mean, we were striking up quite a friendship. And he said, you're Baptist. And I told him we were Baptist and we were going to try to begin a Baptist church. Had to explain what Baptist was, an evangelical church. And so he said, I know someone who's a Baptist. I said, really? He said, yeah, there's a woman here who is a Baptist. And I said, well, where does she live? He said, well, come on, I'll just take you there. And we walked another two blocks right to the back, very end of this dead-end road area. And he introduced us to this woman, and he stuck around, talked with us for a while. Well, it turned out the woman didn't work out at all. It was a dead end.
Right.
But he became the person of peace. Wow. He was a coach. And a very well-respected coach. I mean, he trains young men to play baseball, and he's taken a lot of them are playing in the major leagues now that he has trained.
Wow.
And so very well-known where he was, national hero in baseball. And so anything he opens for you, that door is open. Mm-hmm. And so he later came to know Jesus, and Jay led him to Christ, I think. And he is the one that you'll meet when we go and do baseball camps and that type of thing. He's the one to open those doors. Very much a success story in that way.
That is so beautiful. And the Lord has opened doors like that for you in multiple ways, I imagine.
All over. Yeah, all over. Yeah, he's done that in every country that I've ever been a part of. But missions is so much bigger than just the evangelism. That's what I was trying to say. Before. I mean, some of the countries that I've gone into, like India, the need was not so much in evangelism as training their own people to be evangelistic and using storying method to do that so that they could go to their neighbor and be able to share the gospel because they don't have Bibles. I mean, if they're going to learn the stories, then you have to use a story method. It's something we need to do more of here. The functional illiteracy rate in Mississippi is at 51%.
Wow.
It's at 49%, I think, for the whole nation. Functional. That means somebody could read to you a paragraph out of a book, but if you ask them what they just read, they couldn't tell you what they just read.
There's no repetition of oral.
So we tell people, read your Bible every day. Well, if they read their Bible every day, but they don't know what they read, there's no way they can apply it.
Right.
And so you turn around with a storying approach, and you're able to teach them what the story means, and then they can not only you teach them what it means, but they can repeat it to someone else. And so those are the methods that we need to use.
Right.
They're doing a lot of that. I did the same thing in Africa. Four fields. I've taught all kinds of different mission type studies.
That was really how the gospel was shared in the very beginning.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it was story after story.
And people nowadays will discredit that because it's like they would prefer it to be written down to where you can just go at it. And that's why the gospels were written so far after. But like, you know, learning it in your heart and then repeating it orally is... I don't think we should discredit that at all.
No, that's original. That's original.
That's a side note from missions, but I just had that thought. But
yeah,
what would you? There are some people, like I know a friend who is contemplating missions, and he's in high school. And how would you recommend them to seek out where the Lord? Number one, if the Lord is calling them,
right.
And where anyone should go into missions. How would you recommend that?
Give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take a short-term trip. I surrendered to missions when I was in seminary, but I was not called to be a missionary.
Right.
It's just I had never given that part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It had never occurred to me that I had never given that part of my life. You know, as Christians... A young Christian, you give what you know of your life to the Lord, but your life keeps growing and developing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to continually, you know, daily, giving God that part of your life. And so I had never really given God that part of my life until an IMB missionary got up and said, you know, 90% of the full-time paid ministers work in the United States of America, where only 5% of the population exists. Either we're making a mistake or God's making a mistake, and God doesn't make mistakes. And so God's calling a lot more people out, but they're not listening to the call. So I went on a short-term trip in the 80s, early 80s, and I thought, my goodness, I don't know a lot, but I know so much more about Scripture than these people do. If I knew the language, I would know even better, because I didn't speak a word of Spanish at that point in time. And so I got back home, was talking to my wife, and Karen had already told me one time, she said, when I came in from seminary, and I said, well, you know, I surrendered that if God wanted us to be missionaries, we would go. And she said, when you get back, we'll be here waiting for you. You know, she had not surrendered that part at that point. But I came back, and I'd already decided she'll have to bring it up. I'm not going to. She's got to be called, or we can't go. And so she approached me one day, and she said, you know, I think God may be calling us to missions. And we started that. We started the process. But it was a short-term trip that really opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, missionaries are not perfect. They're just people. And so they'll make mistakes just like all of us make mistakes. And but they're there, and they're trying, and they've got a call, and God uses them, I think, sometimes in some amazing ways. But I would suggest, you know, go to do a short-term mission trip and then begin to study long before Karen decided to be a missionary. I was looking up everything I could find on cultures, different cultures of different places. And, I was just fascinated with, still am. I'm still fascinated with all the different cultures in the world and the different worldviews and, how you create bridges between a biblical worldview and their worldview and those types of things just fascinate me still to this day.
Yeah.
And so you never lose it. You just never lose the call. I mean, we're home from that mission field, but I think maybe some of the better work that I've done is seeing other people called.
Mm-hmm. Equipping.
Equipping them to be missionaries.
That's so good. Yeah, I know there may be a lot, especially when I was in high school, there was a lot of zeal to go overseas. And I think the Lord, he really positioned me, if you want, I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I would consider myself to be doing missions into schools where lost people are.
Oh, yeah, you are. You so, definitely are.
So I don't know. I don't want to use the term wrong. Yeah,
No, that is a people group.
Yeah.
I mean, students are distinctly different, high school different than college students. Mm-hmm. And so, you're exactly right. You're in a people group.
There, you know, and there still is a zeal to me, and I'm kind of just talking to you at this point of the idea of going overseas into missions, and I can't quite describe it other than like when I see a video of just someone, my heart breaks, my heart softens, and I'm just like that's honestly that's the purest form of worship to me.
Right.
Is loving people, and that you see that in the two commandments of love the Lord your God with all your heart.
Yeah.
But then the second is just like it, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. And I think that they just go pair. And I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I'm kind of just sharing with you a little bit of my zeal for missions. But right now, I know the Lord has planted me like here in Meridian. But I have no clue where I want to go one day. And so I
could see you and Alex in another country. I really could.
Yeah.
And particularly with her choice of professions that she is working toward.
Right.
So I mean, I could definitely see you working in those areas.
I don't know why. I don't know if this is where the Lord is calling us one day, but Japan has always fascinated me. I love Japan.
And it is probably the hardest place.
Mm.
Because it's ancestral worship there.
Yeah.
And so if you change and you become a Christian, you no longer worship your ancestors, and it's like you're breaking that family tie.
Mm.
And they are just often unwilling to give that up.
Yeah.
And you got to give it all up. Mm. I mean, Jesus wants all of you or none of you.
Right.
I mean, he wants you all.
Right.
And so they have to give that up, and they're just not willing to do it. And so it is one of the hardest places in the world. I know. I mean, I know missionaries that are there, and I've known missionaries that were appointed there. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, like, and this is not in Japan, but, like, I have seen so many Asian Americans. There's been a huge wave of Asian Americans who have been coming to the Lord and becoming Christian. And, you know, and I see that in pockets, but I don't know. I'll tell you what strikes me about Japan is I love Japan photography, and I know that's weird to connect that, but the more that I've like watched Japanese photography, like people, street photography and stuff, it's just like, I love the culture. Like it just looks so cool. And that leads me to another question. Is there room for you to be excited about a culture and like you think something's cool and that be some of the reason you want to go on missions?
Yeah.
You know, I know that's not the main priority.
Right.
You know, but I know some people like to go on missions because it's fun, right? Well, tell me how to decipher between those feelings.
Yeah, well, it may be fun for a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets to be frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
We think of the weekly mission trips.
Right.
Like, that's fun.
That's
But when it comes to packing up everything and going, that's different. That's
when you can't come home, okay, when you realize when it strikes you, I cannot get back home, you know, if no matter what happens, my parents die, no matter what happens, I cannot get back home in time. It becomes totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And then the things that are fun don't seem to be quite as much fun anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For instance, Latin American culture, people are never in a hurry and they never want to disappoint you. And so if you call a guy up and you say, listen, I've got a pipe that broke at my house and I can't get it fixed. Can you come fix it? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. When can you be here? Well, I'll be there tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. 12 o'clock passes, 2 o'clock passes. You call him up. Oh, Oh, that's right. Yeah, I had something else that came up. I'll be there tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Well, about the fourth time that he tells you that, you realize you're not in the United States anymore. And that's just common. It's just normal for them. They don't think anything about it. Or somebody sets a meeting up. You set a meeting up with someone, and they're going to be there at 10 o'clock. And at 12 or 1, they show up.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've already started something totally different by that time. And their excuse is, well, somebody hadn't seen it in a long time, came by, and we had to go get some coffee. Well, that was more important to them than the meeting. The relationships are far more important than business or meetings.
Yeah.
I admire that. I mean, too. I love it.
I do too.
But it will frustrate the life out of you when you're North American and you're not accustomed to it. I mean, we value every minute.
We have the hustle mentality.
Yeah. I had friends of mine that came and stayed for about a year in the States and then moved back to Argentina. And when I was talking to him about, I said, you know, what were some of the unusual things that you, he said, the most unusual thing for me is that if there's a restaurant and it's 70 miles away, y'all don't think about, you'll get in the car and if somebody says, where is that restaurant? And they'll say, oh, it's about an hour away. You don't say it's 70 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
You don't judge by miles and kilometers. You judge by how long it takes me to get there because time is so important to us. To them, if they're paying $5 a gallon for gas, distance, you know, makes a difference, not time. So it's just really interesting the viewpoint that, that someone from another country has when they get here. It's kind of the same thing when we go there. It's just,
And so, the zeal behind missions, it's great, but you know, you don't bank on it. You don't put that on there. But that's interesting. And I took a I forget the name of it, but it was a class on all kinds of cultures in the world, and it's crazy the dynamics of every country. And I it's almost, I almost see you as like Indiana Jones.
Not quite. Not quite. Yeah.
Do you like Indiana Jones?
Oh, yeah. I love those old movies. I haven't seen the new one. I'll have to look at it.
I don't think it touches the originals.
Well, he's as old as I am. Yeah. He's not going to be jumping horses and things anymore. So it'd be funny to watch.
But. Absolutely. But. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to speak to people who may be interested in missions. Is there anything at all?
If I can talk to you about missions, I'd be happy to do it. As you were talking about, if you don't know what people groups' worldview and understand their customs, you'll never be an effective witness to them.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to figure out where their barriers to the gospel are. And then you have to find ways to break those barriers down and communicate them in a way to find some common ground.
Right.
It's like with the Muslims, the first five books of the Bible, they will agree with you on.
Yep.
So now you've got to go to the story of Abraham and Isaac and try to show where the blood that would have been shed from an innocent child, and now it's shed from a lamb that God provided. Jesus fulfilled that. He was the sinless lamb. So you've got to move, and that's a bridge that you can move across cultures and across religions. And so I would say that, and there are several, there are people groups all around us.
In America,
In America.
Yeah.
And you could almost say school teachers are a people group. They think alike, you know, they're very much alike. They've got the same hours. They're almost a people group.
Right.
They have their own language.
Right.
So, you know, everywhere you go, there are little subgroups and people groups. So if you're going to share the gospel, figure out where they are and what they do and how then to build a bridge so you can share the gospel.
Yeah.
But I would encourage you to do that. Missions is wherever you can find lost people to share the gospel at that point.
That's beautiful.
All right.
Well, Mr. Greg, thank you for sitting down with me and just sharing your heart.
Man, glad to. I enjoyed just talking with you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate what you do, and thank you for all the things that you've done for the glory of the Lord in your years. And I'm excited to talk to you more off camera about just missions, because I mean, it's
my favorite subject.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Yeah, everyone watching, thank y'all for watching. We'll see you on another one. All right, see ya.